Mr. Lingard, Reel 4. Now we've done this bit where you were at the HMS Victory and the camps and but on a variety of duties. And you reckon this lasted roughly to September 42?
Till early September 42.
And then what happened then? What was your...
Well, going back into Pompey Barracks again about that month, then I picked up another posting then to the HMS Ulster Monarch, which I hadn't got a clue what it was, and I was to pick that up at Rosyth in Glasgow, and got the usual, you know, corned beef sandwiches and a railway pack, and caught the train from London up to Glasgow, and reported at the dockyards to this ship, and I had the shock of my life when I seen it. Each side was six carriers, troopers, you know, landing barges, six of those. And I thought, oh my God, what have I landed myself in here for, with the landing barge on the side? We hadn't manned the ship many days there, and we settled into it. And then we started cruising around. We went over to Belfast then, to pick up some troops. And that was preparing then for the invasion in North Africa, the torch landings, which was in October, I think, at the middle of 12th of October, something like that. Immediately we picked the troops up, we set sail in the convoy, headed through onto the Mediterranean to these landing exercises. We thought exercise, but it was a genuine thing when we got there, dropping these on the side there. Everything went fine.
Now, what were your duties on board the ship?
I was just a seaman gunner on the ship. I wasn't... the other duties on the ship was lowering the oars down, for lowering the barges down. They was all lowered down by hand. All the landing craft were. Nothing mechanical about them.
Well, to tell me exactly how... Do you remember how that worked?
Well, it worked on pulleys and davits on ropes, which you all lined up along the deck there, about a dozen or so on each cable, and load them down gently into the water. The coxswain, whoever it was down there, slipped the catch, and away they went onto the beaches. Some of the ships that was out there had dropped fronts on them, which the troops went out in the water. We didn't. We dropped the landing barges there. If I remember right, I think there was four on each side. And I think they all somewhere around about, I don't know, somewhere in the region about 100 troops, something like that. There seemed to be a lot of them in them barges. We got stuck on a sandbank there.
What was the sort of daily routine like while you were going out in the convoy?
The daily routine was mainly keeping the place clean, amusing the Americans, one way and another.
How did you get on with the Americans?
Very good.
They were mainly American troops, or
yes,
all American?
Yes, and they were very much like us, very young. All gung-ho hearty, you know, looking forward to this battle, whatever it was. I'm sure that when they went ashore, they were frightened to death. But during the trip over there, it took us about 12 days to get there. And I'm sure that during that trip, there's quite a lot of seasickness. Quite a lot of them were seasick. And felt very sorry for them.
So you got on well with them?
Got on very well with them, yeah. They all seemed to be a bit bossy about things, you know. They knew what they were doing, we didn't, you know. They'd done it all before in training camps.
And what were your mess decks, like? What were the living conditions like for you?
Well, it was something you went into, and you didn't take it in. The mess decks was bloody awful compared with my ship later on. Bloody awful living conditions.
Well, tell us a bit about it. What do you remember?
Well, we were sleeping in hammocks. In those days, there was no bunk beds. We slept in hammocks, and of course, your nose to tail with them. Your friends, whoever, they were only 2 or 3 inches away from you, you know. Air ventilation was appalling, very much like it was in the barracks. Very thick in the morning. But then again, it was just one of those things. We was young, 18, 19, very stupid. And we just took it as one of those things, you know. It was just a way of life, really.
What was the food like?
Of course, very good, you know. It was fulfilling, you know. We had a lot of American food on board, which was very good. A lot of tinned turkey and tinned chicken and tinned pork. We had loads of food. There was no question about that. A bit different to corned beef, which we usually used to have, you know, with the British Army. Bread was a one thing. We did bake our own bread on board, but there wasn't enough to feed everybody. You know, it was a case of biscuits mostly, dry biscuits for most of them. But life on board wasn't too bad. Getting on with the Americans was fine. We were smoking all American cigarettes, Camel cigarettes, and they swore it was Camel shit, you know. They said it wasn't like Virginia tobacco.
Now, what do you remember of the actual landing? Tell me as much as you... This was on in October, you
this
think?
This was in about the 12th of October, I think it was. We knew we was landing in North Africa. The skipper had been on the tunnel and told us we was doing these landings. We didn't realise how serious it was, really. The bows got stuck on a sandbank as we dropped the barges down.
And where was this? This was at...
Just east of Algiers, this was. And the bows got stuck on a sandbank there. All the barges were dropped and they all went ashore. While this was going on, one of the petty officers come round and he says, in case something does happen and we have to go ashore, take your blouses off and put on these khaki jackets. So we had slung on khaki jackets then. And I thought, you know, we get bloody shot away with this. You start going ashore like this, you don't know where you're going to end up. So we all had khaki blouses then, same as the army did. Anyway, when all the barges had been dropped, we didn't know if we was going to pick them up and bring them back. So it was a case of once they'd gone, they'd gone. And then we had a job getting off the sandbank. And I think we were stuck on that for a few hours, and whether it was a change of tide, the tide rose, or the other activity, over-revving the engines, we eventually got off. While this happened then, getting off there, I found out that somewhere in the uproar that was going on with these boats and that, I'd hurt my right leg and I was limping a bit, you know, and I thought, well, this is...
How had you done that?
I hadn't got the faintest idea, but by the time we got back as far, we were sailing back then, minus the barges, and we're coming back, everything was peaceful and quiet, there's one or two air raids, not very much, and coming back in the convoy there, we didn't know if we was coming home or where we were going. We weren't told. My right leg started to swell up and I thought, you know, I must have twisted my knee or something. Anyway, I went and saw the doc and we was going to pull in at Gibraltar. So by then my right leg had swollen up a bit. So I was put ashore in Gibraltar and I went to a field hospital there. And the doctor there, an army doctor, found a little hole in my groin. And a piece of steel had gone in there, and it was, whether it was a cable steel off one of the cables that had shot into my leg, I don't know. But a little bit of steel had gone into it, just in my groin. That had turned septic, and of course my old leg had swollen. So he stuck a skewer in my little wound, which had healed up by then. And he said, well, there's something in there, you know, he said he could feel something. Anyway, my leg was bandaged up and iodized and shoved back on the ship, and then we came back. And then we came back to Glasgow, and by then my leg had really swollen like a balloon. So that they transferred me then, they just transferred me to a hospital, Mearnskirk Hospital. I ended up in Mearnskirk Hospital, and the nurse looked at me and she says, oh yes, the doctor wanted to see you. Now this was a civilian hospital, it was no military in there, doctors, no military doctors. So the doctors were there, they were very good. And he looked at my leg and he says, oh yes, and he examined. And I says, well, they had a little probe in my groin there and they said there's something in there, whether it's a piece of wire off one of the springs that had shot in my leg or whatever it was. So he had a little probe in there and he says, yes, he says, what we'll do, he says, they've put a plaster cast on my leg, you know, in Malta. And of course, my leg is swollen.
Gibraltar or Malta?
In Gibraltar. And that put this plastic cask on, which was absolutely useless. Just my leg had swollen up inside, so they had to cut that off. Because my leg looked a bit soggy by then, you know. So ended up in Mearnskirk. They cut the plaster off my leg and they found this little hole that had healed up again in my groin. They had a little poke round in that. And they said, oh, we'll have it in a day or two. Opposite me, there was a Canadian soldier with his left arm in splints. Where he got it, I don't know, a young Canadian. Him and I got on well. We was only two servicemen in there. And him and I got on quite well in the bed opposite me. We had a chat and one or two things. And he went in for an operation on his upper arm, his shoulder. And he came out and his arm was propped up like a letter L, you know, all in the splint. And his jacket was all cut. And he said, I think you're due in tomorrow. He said, I saw your name on the board, you see. So the next morning, they wheeled me in there, into hospital, in the operating theatre. And I wasn't in there very long, I don't think. It was during the morning, 9, 10 o'clock when I went in. But it was before lunch when I was out again. And I was back in my bed when I woke up. And when I woke up in bed, I had a big cage on me. And the Marine who was over there saw this Canadian soldier. He came over, you see, and he says, are you all right? And I said, yeah, I feel fine. He said, yeah, you know, I've got a cage over here. I've got a great big cage all over me. And he said, what they done? I said, I don't know. So he said, okay, let's have a look and see what they've done, you see. And he pulled the clothes back. And of course, I got no pyjamas on or anything. I'd just got a sort of short night shirt on. And I looked down. Now, I don't know whether you should record this or not, but when he pulled the clothes down to look, my penis was bandaged up. And I thought, what the bloody hell's happened here, you see? I thought, they must have slipped with a knife or something. Anyway, I put my hands down and had a feel. My penis was all bandaged up, and I thought, something funny around here. And my leg was all bandaged. There was a certain amount of blood round me groin. So I called the nurse over. I always remember her. Lovely girl, Nurse Carr, and she got a son in the Navy the same age as myself. And I said to Nurse Carr, what the hell have they done? Oh, she says, I'll come and talk to you in a minute. Pull the clothes back over. Clothes come back over, and I was worried then. Anyway, she came back, a few minutes, she came back and pulled a chair up. She says, now I'll tell you, she says, when they operated on you to find out what this piece of metal was, they did get it out, and it was like a rusty needle when they pulled it out, and all your leg had gone a bit funny. She says, anyway, they've cleaned it all up, they've cut it all out, and you're all bandaged up. I said, well, what's this down here then bandaged up? Well, she says, the doctor who operated on you, she says, he thought everybody should be circumcised. So he's done you while he was working there. Now, this is quite true. And I says, what? She says, well, he doesn't believe in it. He thinks everybody's much cleaner. He says, and he decided that there and then we'd do the whole lot, all in one go while he was out. He said, and that's why it's all bandaged up. And I says, oh. I said, well, can I have a word with him? Well, I think it was the following day when he come round to have a look, and he come and he shook hands with me and he said, how are you, son? And I said, I'm all right, but I want to have a word with you. What have you been doing? Ah, well, he said, it's like this, son. He says, I think everybody should be circumcised. Now, whether he was Jewish, I don't know. Whether his relations were in that trade, I don't know. He said, well, it's much cleaner for you. He said, and I think you'll feel a lot better for it. He says, and between you and I, you'll be so pleased this time, you'll be able to bang it against the wall. He said, it's that good. He said, I've made a very good job of it. I thought, my God. But it was quite true. You know, it was much cleaner, as I learned, as years, much cleaner job. And I was crazy about it. But I was thinking the other week, you know, if it had been today, I could have sued him, couldn't I? I could have sued him. Not for disfiguration, but I certainly could have sued him. But that was. Oh, another thing got mixed up when I was in hospital, because when they took me in hospital, off the ship, took me into Mexico, I only had a boiler suit on, and my boiler suit had got the name Dave embroidered on the pocket. And that wasn't my name. And, of course, on the board at the foot of my bed, it had got Dave Lingard. And the nurse said, OK, you know, what's your next of kin and your mother and where do you live and all that? And I said, half a minute. I says, you've got my initials wrong down there. It's not Dave Lingard. She says, you must have told somebody it was. I said, no, I haven't. Anyway, she fetched out my old boiler suit and embroidered across the pocket was Dave, you see, and says, oh, that's where they got it from. what's your real name? I says, my proper name is George, George Lingard. She said, oh, that's where they got it. She says, never mind. I'll tell the doctor when he comes round. You know, it's just one of those little things. We do make these mistakes. Anyway, that cleared that up. As far as that was concerned, everybody in the hospital was by then calling me Dave. And one or two that knew me from the old days still call me George. The newcomers in the hospital, the chap in the bed on the other side, he called me Dave because it was written on the board. And we got on quite well. As I got better, and of course, as my leg was still bandaged up, I was in a wheelchair then. The Canadian soldier on the other side, he was up and about by then with his arm in a sling there. And he said, do you think we ought to go out and have a drink? There's a pub over the road. I said, yeah, okay then, come on. He said, I'll take you in the wheelchair. Because I couldn't walk. So he borrowed a wheelchair and the nurse says, don't go too far with him because the doctor's rounds, evening rounds, is at 6 o'clock. So in the wheelchair, the blanket round me, and off we went, and straight over to the pub, you see. And of course, we was in the pub there. You didn't have to buy a drink. Everybody was buying you drinks. There's this Canadian soldier with his arm in a sling. There's me with my leg in a bandaged up on a trolley. So he says, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a few bottles back with us, give the lads in the ward, you know, some of the civilians. So we got about half a dozen bottles of beer, shoved them round the back of me. And little did we realise, we were both as drunk as monkeys, the pair of us. Trying to cross the road was hilarious. He was pushing me with one arm, and that was very awkward. He had to hold there was two handles on the pushchair thing we was using. Of course, he could only use one. And he was wheeling, the police picked us up in the finish. And the policeman come along and he says, you know, you're a disgrace, the uniform, the pair of you. So he wheeled me back to the ward, and in the ward there, he had a word with the sister. And he says, just keep them locked up for a few days, will you? He said, they've had a right time in the pub over the road. And of course, I've still got these bottles of beer around the back. I mean, of course, the soldier went off to have a pee, and I got the wheelchair, and I wheeled myself down the ward, and I hadn't got a clue. I was bumping into beds, tumbling over, giving bottles of beer away. The sister come in, this nurse car, oh, and she gave me a right old bollocking, she did. She told me off. I wouldn't be allowed out again. But it was a good day, it ended up. The police didn't arrest us. We held up the traffic, apparently, because it was in the local paper. And I was in there till January, I think it was.
So that would be from late October to January?
To January, yeah.
So you came out in January. Were you recovered then?
I was recovered then, fully recovered. I'd spent Christmas in hospital, which I enjoyed. I fully recovered there. And an officer came in, a naval officer came in with a chief petty officer, and he says, you know, the ship that you was on has gone. It's other places now. But we've got all your kit. So they got all my kit off the boat, and my kit was my hammock, my kit bag, my case, that was all piled up there on the entrance to the hospital. And he said, well, here's your railway warrant now, HMS Victory, back to Pompey Barracks. So they just left me there, and I thought, well, how am I going to get back there, you see, from Mearnskirk? So I made some inquiries, found out that no such things as taxis, couldn't even afford them anyway. Got on the bus, got down to Glasgow Central, I think was the station. And then caught a train then, which I think it went all around the bloody country. I know I had to change at Crewe with all my kit. And then change again in London to another train. And then eventually ended up in Portsmouth, which took somewhere about 24 hours of travelling. Ended up in Pompey Barracks again. And I was sent on leave then. And I was used to some recovery leave or something. Anyway, they sent me on leave, and that was 21 days. I had 21 days leave and sent home. When I got home, my mother said, oh, I had a letter from the Admiralty saying that you was missing, but not lost. You was missing, but they would inform you later on where you were. Well, all the time I was in hospital, I never thought about writing to my mother, you know. Never give it a thought. And I suppose in those days you naturally assumed that somebody else would tell her, I don't know, but I never wrote her. And then she says, where you been? I said, oh, I've been up in Glasgow. I'd never told her I went into hospital. She'd have done her nuts, you know. But she said, where are you now? I said, I'm back in barracks. I had me 3 weeks leave, and then
what
I...
What was it like on leave? I mean, what do you remember of leave? Was it good fun, or was it quiet?
Well, there was very few servicemen on leave with you at that time. So it was a case of you was mixing with people who were working on munitions, working in factories. But you had plenty of good company in the pubs and that. You know, you never had to buy a drink if you was in uniform. Everybody would buy you a drink. Particularly being a sailor, and he was in the Midlands where there's no sea, and sailors are few and far between. It was quite good. I enjoyed it. When I joined up, I also joined up with a school friend of mine, Jimmy Jackson, but he went into the Marines. Now, all that the years had passed now, I hadn't met him. We'd come on leave at different times. This particular time, he was on leave. And we was both more or less the same build, you see. And he was at my house. And he said, how about you and I swapping uniforms? And I said, all right then. So I put his Marine uniform on, and he put my sailor's rig on. And we looked a right couple of prats. We did. I didn't suit khaki, and he didn't suit navy blue. We looked a right couple of idiots. Anyway, we went out that night, and of course it was a bit hilarious having a laugh, you know, in the pubs and that. Because I said, hello, you've changed regiments and so forth. But I only spent about 3 days with him, and he had to go back to Deal. And I carried on, had my usual 3 weeks leave.
And then back to Portsmouth, to Victory.
And then back to Victory again.
And what were you doing in Victory Barracks? Same old job?
Same old job, same old routine. Same old duties, same guard duties. I think that sent me back again. I went to Whale Island twice, HMS Excellent. I went there twice. I think that sent me back again on a short aerial course, aircraft recognition course.
Another one.
No, I can't recognise one bloody aircraft from another.
You hadn't got any better then?
No, they all look the same to me. They all fly. And I did a week or two on that, about 3 weeks, and I come back then on the...
Did you fail it?
No, you didn't fail anybody. As long as you could find the doorway to get in and out, you passed anyway, you know. They don't fail you in case you got your ticket and they send you home. No, you couldn't fail. And then in April, about April, it was early April, I had another post in then. I had a draft sheet then to go to Liverpool. And I didn't have a ship. I had a draft sheet to report to the regulating office in Liverpool, Royal Naval Regulating Office in Liverpool, and I had a draft number. And I reported there at Liverpool, and I was put in a private house for a couple of days, accommodation. I had all my kit with me. And then I picked up the RMH, the Andes, passenger ship. And I found out we was going over to Canada. And there were stacks of Air Force people on this. There was a few sailors, not very many, one or two officers. Most of them was Air Force personnel. One or two Army, but very few, Army officers. There was a hell of a lot of Air Force on the ship. Talking to those, they said they was going on air observation cruise in Canada. They all seemed to know where they were going. The sailors didn't. They knew they was going to... we didn't learn until we was about halfway there. We was going to Halifax in Nova Scotia. And there we was going to be posted to a ship. We arrived, it took us about 3 weeks, I think, something like that.
Anything about the voyage, or was it free?
It was all right, the voyage was all right, the accommodation was good, there was several hundred people on the ship, nobody bothered you, the only people that bothered you was the petty officers and the chief petty, who was running routine and putting on duties, you know, lookout duties, cleaning duties. They had to keep you busy or they got bored to death. And then we landed at Halifax in Nova Scotia. We still hadn't got a clue what we were doing. We were mustered on the quayside there. And then we was fed and watered, put on a train then to Boston. And I think that took, I think it took about 2 days. We seemed to be on this train a bloody long time. And we ended up in Boston. When we arrived there, we never seen so many big cars in my life. Everybody got a car, and they were like buses. We'd never seen so many large cars. And those were all the cars you saw on the films, you know, these Packards, Cadillacs. And we thought, my God, they must be rich over here, you know, all these bloody big cars aren't there. No little Austin 7s, you know, little MGs. And then we was gathered together there, and I was put in Fargo Barracks.
What could you describe Fargo Barracks? What was it like?
Like a 5-story hotel. it was an accommodation hotel. There was a lot of Americans there as well with us on these. They were on different floors to us. I was on about the 3rd floor, and there was Americans on the next 2 floors. And there was also some American sailors on there who were waiting for detention because I got talking to one or two and they'd been naughty or something, doing something, and they was getting no pay and they had no cigarettes and they was on the scrounge all the time. But the catering in this place was...
Tell us about the rooms first. What were the rooms like?
Dormitories, quite big. Accommodation was very good.
So how many did a room?
In mine there was only 3. There was 3 in one room, which was very good. I suppose when it was a hotel, I suppose it was just 1 double or 2 singles or something like that. But hotel accommodation was very good.
And a more comfortable bed than...
Oh, yeah. Different to a hammock. Yeah. No wrapping it up in the morning, you know, and parceling it up. No, it was quite comfortable. There's the usual parades every morning.
But sorry, now, what about this food? You want to tell me
the food was good. You know, I would say we were living on chicken. Fresh pineapple, not tin pineapple, fresh pineapple. A cafeteria system where you had a tray with different divisions in it. And you just went along the cafeteria and you had your meat or whatever it is in one section, you know, and so forth, and your salad in another section. And your sweet in another section on the tray. Your knife and fork was supplied. The food was very good, and the thing is, you didn't have to blimey wash up or anything. You, after you'd finish your meal, you'd scrape your bits into a bin and left the trays for somebody to take away and put in a washing machine. That's what happened. But the food was very good. I mean, say, the turkey. I mean, we only had turkey at Christmas. You didn't have it every day. And pork and that. They seemed to leave a lot of fat on it, which I'd never been used to anyway, on the pork. But the chicken and that, well, you got half a chicken. I've never had half a chicken in my life. Half a chicken for dinner. Yeah. But the food was very, very good. Couldn't complain about that.